Trigger warning. The following episode contains references to gore, racism, human suffering, death, factual inaccuracies, several entitled people making light of all these things. If any of the aforementioned topics cause you discomfort, you may want to listen to a different episode.
Scalisi, there is no word for prohibition in Italian. I'm Adam.
Okay, so when the police show up, you just tell them you were inside enjoying this nice turkey dinner. I'm Sean.
I demand prohibition. What? No, not for the rich. I'm Andy.
Sir, this alcohol is killing people. What should we do? Simple. Just add poison. I'm Kelly, and this is Acid Pop. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Today we're going to be talking about the prohibition.
I'm only a semi-prohibition.
It's a good amendment for, what, 4 years?
13.
Whoa.
Jeez.
Oh, wow.
Etymology of prohibit comes from the Latin prohibere, pro meaning away or forth, and habere meaning to hold. So to hold away.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Pro means
to hold.
To hold?
It means away or forth.
Yeah,
away.
That was the prohibit part.
That just seems weird because, like, I don't know, the way we use pro, you know, is like professional, someone who's really good at something. I'm pro this thing. I support it. It means away, that seems weird to me.
There might be more than one pro. Yeah. Like, there's more than one in.
I just had to adjust my visions on the words positive and negative based on a environmental science class.
Hmm. Yeah.
There is no fear of the 18th Amendment. I checked.
There should be, the way people reacted to it.
Yeah.
But the fear of alcohol is methyphobia.
Oh, interesting.
Methy?
Methy is Greek for alcohol.
Is it because you leave things methy?
Only if you drink too much.
He's a methy drunk.
Oh, stop.
We are going to get pretty deeply into the prohibition, but I thought it might be fun to start out with some of the current alcohol laws in the U.S.
Hmm.
So that's what we have for our true or false.
I'm an expert.
First, Nevada has the most lax drinking laws in the U.S.
True.
I'm going to say false. There's got to be somewhere more boring where the only thing you can do is get drunk.
Alaska.
No, there's a lot of blue state. Oh, Alaska might. Oh, Adam might have it. I'm going to say true, but
I'm going to say false.
This is one of those things where it's a little arguable because what does most lax mean? But I'm going to say this is true.
Mm-hmm.
Nevada has no last call.
Yep.
Drinking is prohibited 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year.
Is Nevada the only place without a last call?
Nevada is not the only state without a last call, but the other states have last calls on a city or county level. So, like, depending on where you are, there might be a last call. Whereas in Nevada, throughout the state, there's just no last call.
Who wants dinner for breakfast?
Never gets sung in Nevada.
Nevada has no laws against public drunkenness.
False.
No, this is true.
What?
This is
what?
And it gets more interesting. Not only does Nevada not have a law against public drunkenness, it has a law against local governments passing laws against public drunkenness. It's against the law to make that illegal.
You can't interfere with my right to make an asshole of myself.
I don't know if I had a manager when I worked at a cell phone store that was arrested for being drunk in public, but I don't think he was ever charged with anything. Maybe they just took him in to have him sober up.
Yeah, I mean, they could probably detain you or, like, disturbing the peace or something.
Yeah, they could bust you for something else. But yeah, no law against public drunkenness.
Huh.
In fact, it's required that at least one day a year, every citizen get publicly drunk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Nevada Day.
That's why we have...
Also, Halloween. Okay, people probably don't know. That's the same day.
A little bit of trivia
for
you. In Louisiana, you can get booze in a to-go cup from a drive-thru.
Oh, see, this used to be true all across the United States, actually. There were drive-thru.
Yeah, but you can't do open container, though. That's the cup thing makes me... I'm going to say false.
I'm going to say false as well, because I think the open container thing is... federal law?
This seems like a trick question. I'm going to say true.
Okay, Adam, you are correct.
Oh, man.
A to-go cup in Louisiana is considered a closed container, provided, and this is important, that the restaurant doesn't insert a straw in the cup.
That's what opens it.
Straw must be provided on the side.
Oh, here's your side straw, sir.
Use it responsibly.
Your adult milkshake.
Please don't drink this drink while driving.
Wink, wink.
In Utah, it's illegal to serve alcohol in any restaurant that allows children.
In Utah, I would say probably true.
I'm going to say true.
I'm going to say false.
Andy's got it.
Oh.
However, it is illegal to serve alcohol in a restaurant unless food is ordered as well.
Huh. I mean, if it was true anywhere, it would have been Utah.
Well, until 2017, bartenders in restaurants had to prepare drinks behind frosted glass so that children wouldn't be exposed to the glamour of drinking.
You've been to Utah, right? The bars still have that.
I don't think I've been to a bar in Utah.
We went to like an Applebee's in Utah because my sister went to college in Utah. And the bar for Applebee's, unlike an open bar, was like entirely surrounded by frosted glass with a frosted glass door.
That's crazy.
They call it the Zion Curtain.
Of course they do.
Unlike other places where the bartender has to like spin around and pour drinks from arm's length, this one they have to just sing really well.
Well, I mean, they could still do that. You just see it kind of blurry.
No, he sits in an office chair and just wheels around.
However, this is, like I said, that was overturned in 2017, so restaurants are starting to take them down.
Bring down this frosted glass.
But at this point, wouldn't it cost more to take down the frosted glass than to leave it up?
The owners that I read interviews with said that they lost tons of money because of the frosted glass, because no one wants to sit in front of a pane of frosted glass and drink. They want to interact with a bartender.
Okay, yeah.
But now child alcohol levels are going way up.
Oh, yeah.
Looks so
cool. How cool bartenders are.
I hope the glass had like speakers in it, like when you go to the movie theater, like, how are you today, sir?
On the rocks.
It's like going into a money tree.
Yeah.
In North Dakota, it's illegal to serve beer with peanuts.
No way. They don't really have not have baseball in North Dakota?
That sounds true. False. That sounds true.
Why would she say this unless it was true? Like, where would she come up with this?
That's a good point.
She's a writer.
Damn it. It's got to be true.
So we've got two truths and a false?
Yes.
Okay, this is false.
I finally got one.
Actually, it's illegal to serve beer with pretzels.
Oh.
What? That makes even less sense.
Seriously.
Additionally, it's illegal to use coupons to buy booze.
Coupons? I mean, like at all? You can't get them at a discount? Or
you can't buy booze with coupons at all.
Okay. So quit making the coupons.
Yeah, I mean, I came from South Dakota and I wanted to use these coupons.
It's illegal to ride a horse while drunk in Colorado.
It's that I believe that is illegal most places because that is still
driving.
DUI.
I'm going to say true.
Me too.
Yeah, that's true.
You all got it. The horse is considered a vehicle. You will get a DUI.
Poor horses. What if the horse is drinking?
There are states that have that against the law, but it's not Colorado. Moving on to short answer. What did the 18th Amendment outlaw?
Oh, Lord. I read this last semester and I couldn't tell you, so...
I'm
Here's
not a
hint,
major.
Guys. We're talking about the prohibition.
It's alcohol.
I feel
it's
like you're going to want something really specific.
Well, I was looking for the specific thing. They actually don't... It's like the wording is different, but it's alcohol.
Spirits. Yeah. So that's why we don't have ghosts anymore.
Selling drinkable alcohol.
You could still sell it.
Wink.
It outlawed the production, transport, and sale of alcohol. It did not outlaw drinking alcohol.
So I got one third of a point.
And the thing is you could still sell it as a medicine.
Drinking was fine. And indeed, before the law went into effect, the wealthy cleaned out liquor stores and had massive stockpiles of booze to see them through the dark times.
Damn you, Gatsby!
It's like one of those disaster movies, but it's only the alcohol aisle that's been destroyed.
So FDR signed the 21st Amendment, lifting the federal ban on alcohol. What did he say when he did it?
Cheers. Delano, FDR. He said,
my legs hurt.
We're in the middle of a world war. Fuck it.
He said, what America needs now is a drink.
That's then he very had a appropriate.
But he was already having martinis, let's be honest.
Well, it wasn't legal to drink them.
He just couldn't move.
There was a I don't have this anywhere. We're not going to go into it. But there was a bootlegger who specifically served Congress. He was known as the man in the green hat.
He had a monkey.
Some sort of capybara.
What state was the last to legalize alcohol, and when did it do it?
I would imagine it's in the Bible Belt somewhere. Or Utah.
Yeah. Oklahoma, 1850.
I gotta go Utah.
Oh, yeah. This is after the Prohibition.
No, after.
So each state had to individually also allow alcohol.
Hmm. Oklahoma, 1930.
Utah, 1983.
Yesterday.
I'm also going to say Utah, but I'm going to say 1847. No, 1947.
It was Mississippi, and they legalized alcohol in 1966.
Man.
Wow.
Really hung in there, guys.
To this day, about half of Mississippi's counties are dry, meaning they still don't allow alcohol.
Sure.
Wink.
What's the link between NASCAR and the Prohibition?
Oh, it's because they NASCAR originated by the people running alcohol. That's how the races were.
He's right, you know.
It's because the first NASCAR races, you had to do it with a case of beer in the seat. And if you spilled any, you were disqualified.
No, it's Adam had it.
Adam, you do indeed have it.
I got it.
The rum runners would soup up their cars, mostly Fords, and race each other on the weekends. And because of what they were doing, they had to get really good at driving on fast, curvy roads, and they got to be really good drivers.
Yeah, I learned that in Talladega Nights.
Fast, curvy roads. One curve.
Well, these days.
And even after Prohibition ended, there was still a lot of illegal booze running going on, and some of the early famous NASCAR drivers, such as Junior Johnson, started as illegal rum runners.
Nice.
Now, imagine those old cars, but with the Initial D soundtrack.
Moving on to terms.
Moving at hair-raising 25 miles an hour.
My God.
What is a blind pig show?
Something to do with the police. Okay, a blind pig show is a false sale. So you set up a false sale for alcohol when the real sale is going on across town, and the police show up to the false sale.
The false sale?
The false sale.
Light winter jackets.
I mean, yeah. That sounds plausible.
It's a lap dance, but you have to wear a blindfold.
It's like a donkey show, but it's in Canada.
With pigs.
As we said, selling alcohol was illegal. So some bars would sell tickets to an attraction for some sort of oddity, such as a blind pig. And complimentary with your ticket was a glass of booze.
Complimentary was a great big loophole.
What kind of pet store is this anyway?
What is a jakewalk?
That's when you've got a bunch of bottles stuffed into your jacket and you try and walk without clinking past the cops.
Try to sneak them into the movie theater.
Jakewalk?
Mm-hmm. J-A-K-E.
That is when you are just Jake Gyllenhaal walking across the street with an open container, though.
It's when a guy named Jake fools the cops and it was super easy. He says, man, that was a Jake walk.
That Jake. Okay, so there was a patent medicine. The slang term for it was Jake, and it was Jamaican ginger with a super high alcohol content.
Oh, patent medicines.
So high that they were required to up the ginger content and make it disgusting?
Up the ginger content, not lower the alcohol content.
Make this gross and it'll be legal.
So the bootleggers responded by putting something into it to make it drinkable again, which unfortunately turned out to be a neurotoxin.
Oh, God.
And some 50,000 people basically developed a permanent paralysis of the legs that caused them to limp, and that was called a jakewalk.
Wow. Jamaican
like
rum-induced limp.
Might have been a little like Jake Busey.
What's a black and tan?
A black and tan, I mean, sounds like a blackstrap molasses with rum.
I'm pretty sure I've drinking a black and tan before. It's Guinness and what's the other that like cream Irish stuff?
Irish cream?
No, it's the alcohol.
Baileys.
I think it's
Irish whiskey.
I think it's Baileys and Guinness. I could be wrong. It's been a while.
Adam, is your drink based off of a very bad thing? We're about to be told a very bad thing, I think.
Maybe. I don't know.
So they say the first time you get caught with alcohol by the cops, they bend you over and spank you. And it was called a black and tan.
Well, I have no doubt that, Adam, you're probably correct that that is some sort of drink. But at the time, a black and tan was an integrated nightclub. One of the side effects of the prohibition was that in a time of pretty severe segregation, black people and white people were partying together at speakeasies.
Alcohol's more powerful than racism.
It was also the jazz age, so.
Okay, a black and tan is a beer cocktail made by layering a pale beer and a dark beer.
Yes.
What does WCTM stand for?
WCTM.
We came to move.
What came tomorrow, Mark?
WCTM, Adam.
What could Trevor Marbles make?
Okay, this was the Women's Christian Temperance Movement.
Have you seen the picture of them?
Yes, and I think everyone picks that picture for a reason. Anyway, so this was a group that was predominantly active in the 1800s and sort of faded out about the time that Prohibition, other people sort of took up the flag. And one of the reasons they weren't very successful is because they had a do-everything policy. So they wanted temperance and voting rights for women and abolition, and they wanted to educate women. So it was all good stuff, but it was sort of scattered. And as a result, they didn't make a lot of political
change.
Yeah. But I want to talk about a specific member of the Women's Christian Temperance Movement, and this is our first little story.
Ronald Reagan.
I don't know why that was so funny to me.
So, Carrie Nation was a member of the Women's Christian Temperance Movement who was maybe a little on the extreme side. Her first husband was an alcoholic. They married in 1867 and got a divorce due to his alcoholism. She remarried and moved to Kansas. At the time, Kansas was a dry state, so, you know, she's trying to get away from alcohol. It was the right place to be. But they weren't enforcing the laws as stringently as she would have liked.
Moonshiners.
They didn't hang people that drank.
In June of 1900, she awoke from a dream in which God suggested she go to Kiowa, Kansas, and break down a saloon.
Off to a good start.
Well, I'd like to point out that anytime you awaken from a dream where God tells you something, stop.
Just take a breather.
That's one thing I really like about the Quaker religion is like they sit and they listen to God. And then afterwards, they talk it out as a group to make sure everyone's on the same page about what was heard.
I just like that she used the word suggested to sort of take some of the blame away from God. It's like, well, you didn't make me.
Look, God might have said this.
So anyway, she picked up an axe and did exactly as God told her.
Suggested to her.
And in the next 10 years, she used axes, hammers, and rocks to attack bars and pharmacies.
Pharmacies?
Well, they sold alcohol.
Well, yeah, because pharmacies were a huge alcohol thing.
Yep. She was arrested 30 times.
Wow. Well, apparently not for very long each time.
So she justified her actions by saying she was... This is a quote, and it's a great one. She was a bulldog running along at the feet of Jesus, barking at what he doesn't like.
Jesus made wine.
So one of the things that the temperance movement tried to do, and this is another thing I'm not getting into in detail, is they tried to have biblical scholars rewrite the Bible to remove all references to alcohol.
That's a tall order.
Oh, please, Kelly, we've already rewrited the Bible.
That's for sure. So anyway, she had lots of fans who sent her gifts of hammers and hatchets.
Stop! No.
Those are called enablers, kids.
And there were companies that made little souvenirs that she sold alongside her autobiography at lectures.
Souvenir hatchet.
It's just a tiny hatchet.
Yeah, autograph my hatchet, please.
Will you sign my rock?
My sledgehammer?
So that was the Women's Christian Temperance Movement. And this isn't a history podcast, so I'm not going to go into all the details of what happened between them and the passing of the 18th Amendment. You'll just have to take it on faith that it did happen.
Lots of high fives.
You just leave me on this cliffhanger.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So now we're going to talk about the KKK. What? And how
I'm listening.
Prohibition was a big recruitment tool for them. Help them spread mm-hmm. north. First, I have to read this great quote about William J. Simmons, who was the founder of the modern Klan, was expelled for chronic drunkenness. He spent his later years in an Atlanta movie house smelling of bourbon and watching Birth of a Nation over and over.
Whoa. I've watched Birth of a Nation. Not a great movie.
The next Imperial Wizard.
Imperial Wizard.
Yeah.
Are we all laughing at this point?
It's kind of a cool name.
I'm the Imperial Wizard.
Decided that, you know, to really move the KKK forward, he really need to focus in on the anti-Catholic, anti-Jewish parts, because the anti-Black part played really well in the South, but it wasn't getting them all the way across the nation the way he wanted to.
Listen, guys, we need a new angle.
Hey, guys.
Who else could we hate?
We're the new revised KKK.
One of the things that they really got behind that did them well was Prohibition, because there was a lot of classism and anti-immigrant bias in Prohibition, like those newcomers coming over, they're all drunkards, we can't trust them. And the Klan was all for that sort of thing.
It's the Irish thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, again, anti-Catholic.
Oh, well.
They were able to enroll people all across the U.S. They increased their membership by like 3 million.
Whoa.
Jesus.
What?
And they were able to elect Klan-backed candidates for governor in Oregon, Colorado, and Kansas.
Really?
In Detroit, a Klan candidate whose name wasn't even on the ballot was nearly elected mayor.
Now, I'm a little disappointed in America that, you know, it's like, man, I can't drink. I guess I'll go join the KKK.
So the thing that Prohibition really allowed them to do was go beat the shit out of people and say that they were doing it for illegal reasons.
Just had to slip a brandy in their pocket and it was all gold.
They would essentially raid homes, target immigrant Catholics, and, you know, claim they found wine or liquor.
I found a bunch of wine in here.
There was a county in Illinois, Williamson County, and it had a lot of bootlegging going on. And the governor or mayor decided to look for help, and the KKK was just happy to be of assistance. They were deputized to clean up the county.
A lot of good choices here.
Those were some really intimidating neighborhood watch signs.
Have you seen a ghost?
After midnight on February 1st, 1924, they raided the homes of immigrant Italian mine workers, terrorized women and children, smashed down doors, threw bottles of wine, lit houses on fire, and planted evidence.
As you do.
That part's important.
And there are stories that any wine they didn't smash, they just drank themselves.
Can't have this out on the streets.
Look, look, look. Oh, finally, contained.
As a good white man, I can handle this booze.
Italian, okay.
Different time, different ideas of race.
Not white enough.
You guys are slightly tan.
So now that we're talking a little bit about the Italians, maybe we should talk about the mob.
Was that racist? Felt a little racist.
Which one?
We're going to talk about the Chicago mob and Capone's outfit.
See?
Was Capone Italian?
I don't know.
You know, that didn't come up, but like everyone around him was.
Okay. Well, I don't know if he was Italian.
They
or I
said
thought
he was a pillar of the Italian-American community, so I'm going to say he was Italian. Oh.
Then let's go for that.
Maybe he's honorary Italian. Like he went to an Olive Garden. Now he's family.
His name was Alphonse, which is a lot less intimidating.
You know, I didn't want to accept you in here, but now you went to the Olive Garden, you've taken up breadsticks, you've taken on a little bit of salad.
So in a lot of ways, Prohibition created organized crime as we know it. There was so much money to be made that relatively small gangs were able to become the organized, huge, fingers-in-everything crime families that we know of.
Seriously.
For example, Capone brought in $100 million a year.
Whoa.
And that's in the money of the time. It was over $1 billion a year in today's money.
Yeah.
That's more than I make in a month.
Capone was not only ruthless, he was a great businessman.
He was an accountant first and a mob boss second.
At one point in the 1920s, he paid out $500,000 a month So $6 million in today's dollars in bribes to police to let him operate his illegal booze trade.
I want to get bribed.
That's where you get Elliot Ness.
You were pretty against it in our Unappreciated Genius episode, I just have to say.
Well, that was then. This is now.
Let's get bribed now.
As I said, he was also considered by many a pillar of the Italian-American community. He was well-loved. He provided milk to schools, sent flowers to gangsters' funerals.
After he killed them?
Well, that was the thing. It said to rival gangsters' funerals, so it actually seemed sort of cruel. They said he sent a $5,000 flower arrangement to one.
$5,000?
Well.
And in the 1930s, he operated one of Chicago's first soup kitchens.
Let's just say he did a lot of good in the community while also being the worst person in history.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, if he's bringing in over $1 billion a year, he's not doing that much good. I mean, he's not wiping out malaria.
Well, but that's a big thing for mobsters, is to be accepted by the community, like handing out turkeys at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So they say, that Al Capone, well, he runs liquor and he kills people, but I got a turkey.
His gang was called The Outfit. They ran bootlegging, brothels, illegal gambling, etc. on the south side of Chicago.
That's a good name.
Seriously.
During Chicago's beer wars from 1922 to 1926, 315 mobsters were killed, and the police killed an additional 160.
Wow.
Jeez. And a mobster shortage.
It was a huge death toll.
So Capone was 3-1 against the cops.
So, Andy, you seem to know a lot about this, so I'm hoping you can help me on this next bit.
Watch several documentaries because Al Capone fascinates me.
So, one of his major hitmen was John Scalise? Scalise? How do you pronounce it?
Scalise, yes.
Okay. So, there's a science fiction author named John Scalzi, and I keep wanting to say that. That's Scalzi. That's a completely different guy. He hasn't, to my knowledge, killed anyone.
Well,
thanks for qualifying.
John Scalise. Referred to as having an ill-fitting glass eye.
Mm-hmm. It was the size of a baseball.
And that was one of the things that he'd intimidate people simply by looking at them.
Or near them.
In their direction.
No, that's the thing. It's like he had an ill-fitting glass eye and it would often turn white.
Was it like a mood eye?
Well, no, because it would turn.
Oh. So
that's pretty creepy.
His partner was Albert and Semi, and they were referred to as the murder twins, which is sort of a cute nickname.
Sort of on the nose.
So in 1925, Scalise, Anselmi, and another dude.
My Scalise.
Ambushed some Northside gangster, shooting up their car with shotguns and wounding one of them. About an hour later, as they were trying to escape, they were sighted and pursued by a detective squad. High-speed chase, cars screech to a halt, the gangsters jump out, open fire, and killed two officers and wounded a third. They were caught and brought to trial, and the prosecutor said, "We'll see these men in the gallows." Whereas the killer's lawyer said that they had only reacted to unwarranted police aggression.
Well, of course.
They got off on manslaughter.
Yep.
Just stand their ground.
They were sentenced to 14 years in prison, but they got a retrial and were released.
When you have $1 billion.
Yep. So Capone threw them a big party, climaxing in a shootout with champagne bottle corks. Very cute.
Like they were shooting the corks?
I think they were popping the champagne.
Yeah, they were.
Oh.
Got you.
So Scalise was also involved in the V-Day massacre and
Valentine's Day massacre.
Yeah, sorry. Valentine's Day. We're not going to go into that one because we already talked about it. See our... What episode was that?
Valentine's Day episode.
See our Valentine's Day episode.
Scalise's all over Capone. It's...
It was in our Earth Day episode for some reason. It seemed a little tangential, but...
We should do one of those, but it's too depressing. So Valentine's Day massacre... They knew he was guilty, but before he could face trial, he and his murder twin buddy and a third guy just turned up dead on a road in Indiana.
Well, you know.
Choked on a glass eye.
The thing is that Scalise was offering to sing, I believe.
Well, they had been severely beaten and shot to death. One of Scalise's wounds was a gunshot in his glass eye. The fragments lodged in his face.
Ooh.
Well, here's the thing. When you tell somebody that's loyal to Capone that you're going to rat on them.
Yeah.
The coroner said he had never seen such disfigured bodies.
Oh, damn.
Years later, a story emerged that Capone had discovered that Alcemi and Scalise had decided to betray him. So at the climax of a dinner thrown in their honor, he beat them with a baseball bat, and then they were shot by some gunmen.
Wow.
I've seen several accounts of this in documentaries, and the one is that like they ratted him out to a loyal police officer to Capone.
Oh, man.
And then that happened?
Bad luck.
Good try, though.
No, you don't understand. Al Capone did this. Who did he? I'll be right back.
And now we're going to talk about the government's bad habit of poisoning people during the Prohibition.
Yes.
So Christmas Eve, 1926, a man stumbled into the emergency room at New York City's Bellevue Hospital saying that Santa Claus was after him wielding a baseball bat.
Here's your gift.
And before the staff could even really get him calmed down from his hallucination, he died. And then another guy died. And then another.
Sometimes these problems just take care of themselves.
Problems.
By dusk on Christmas, the staff tallied more than 60 people desperately ill from alcohol and 8 dead of it.
Wow.
Within the next 2 days, another 23 people died in the city from booze.
I've heard this as
from Christmas toasts, basically.
Yeah.
I love toast.
During the Prohibition, there were 10,000 deaths due to poisoned alcohol.
Wow.
So basically, bootleggers stole industrial alcohol, renatured it, and sold it. And industrial alcohol is basically grain alcohol that has some bad chemicals mixed in to make it undrinkable.
That's like paint thinner.
And
that's why you can take up nail polish.
Yeah.
Industrial alcohol being poisoned was not a new thing. That goes back to like 1906. But the problem was it wasn't poisonous enough. They just kept on stealing it and kept on selling it. So the government decided that the solution was to make it more deadly. So some of the poisons in it that they added in the 1920s were kerosene, brucine, gasoline, benzene, cadmium, iodine, zinc, mercury salts, nicotine, ether, formaldehyde. I could go on, but you know, you get the idea.
It was only 2% alcohol.
I believe ether is the least of the things that you just listed.
Not nicotine.
They also demanded more methyl alcohol be added, up to 10% of the total product.
Ooh, no. Hmm. That's basically gas.
The thing about this that makes it especially cruel is not that the government knew that people were going to drink this anyway and they were going to die. It's that they knew that the poor would drink this anyway and that they were going to die because the wealthy had access to the good stuff. The poor didn't. And so this disproportionately fell on the least fortunate people in the nation.
But Kelly, the only poor people I like to hear about are the people who work in my pores at the spa.
Yeah, from what I understand of this, which is like the whole situation just seems like everyone just needed a good sound slap across the face because like, people went to the government and they're like, they're dying from drinking the paint thinner runoff from like tire factories. And the U.S. went, don't worry, I know what to do. We'll make it more poisonous. That'll stop them. And then the people started drinking it and dying more quickly. And then people would like literally see someone die from drinking this stuff and then drink it themselves. Like, it's just like, why are you all so dumb?
The country was desperate for alcohol.
Hell of a drug.
So in 1926, in New York City alone, 400 people died and another 1,200 were sickened. The next year, 700 people died. And this was repeated in city after city across the nation. Jeez.
Stop poisoning shit.
And that is the last of our stories. Anyone have any personal prohibition stories?
Well,
I lived in the 1920s.
I'll just say that I'm a diabetic, which means I really shouldn't drink. But even if I weren't a diabetic, I don't know. I've never gotten the fascination with alcohol. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So that, for me, makes reading about the Prohibition just like really a surreal experience. Like you take this thing that to me just seems pretty unpleasant from top to bottom. And then you tell people, you can't do this unpleasant thing anymore. And they're like, well, I'll just kill myself then. It's just like, okay.
I mean, the most surefire way to get somebody to do something is tell them they can't do it.
I guess.
True.
But yeah, I read a book a long time ago, and it wasn't specifically about the Prohibition, but basically it was about New York in the 1920s. It was really interesting because before the 1920s, there was no forensic science. Like, that just didn't exist. And largely as a result of all these alcohol deaths, forensic science sort of got its start because they were like, coroners were trying to figure out what killed these people, where, you know, before that it was just like, well, they're dead, so I guess they're dead. This, they actually, you know, did autopsies and things to track it back to this alcohol. Well, and then
it also started a lot of CSI.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just going to say, you gave me a show idea. CSI yeah. Prohibition.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's basically where it started was right. They had to figure out what happened to these dead ass people being shot by gangsters.
Yeah. And then they took that information to the government, and the government responded by making the things more poisonous.
What a good government we have. Always.
Any other stories?
Oh, I do remember going to Georgia and being amazed that the alcohol was locked up on Sundays.
Oh, well, I do have one kind of funny story about that. And maybe we've told on the podcast before, but when I graduated college, my dad came out to Chicago to help me move across the country, and we were driving. But just before we left, I got like super mega sick, and I was still driving, but I was driving with like 102 degree fever. And we'd driven like a super long day. It was like 14 hours of driving, and we pulled in.
Sounds like a nightmare.
Yeah. And like, we pulled into the hotel, and I collapsed on the bed, and my dad was just like, God, I need a drink. I'm going to go out and find something that's alcoholic. Anybody want anything?
Never could.
And I was like, I want fruit. I just want fruit. Anything fruit, bring me fruit. And my dad is like, okay, we'll be back. And so him and Kelly went out, and they were gone for like 2 hours. And they came back and they were like, yeah, so it turns out this is a dry county and no one sells fruit anywhere. And so we were all just like sad in the hotel room for the night.
Yeah. I believe I've told the story of me going to a concert in San Francisco. We were planning on staying there, and I hadn't had anything to drink, but the people who are with me had a bunch to drink. And then around 2 o'clock, they were like, okay, we're shutting the bar down. Everybody goes, shutting down?
What?
So I remember when I was living in Colorado, I went to the Whole Foods to try and find some kind of fancy alcohol.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and I was wandering around for a while, and I couldn't find any alcohol anywhere. So I eventually had to ask somebody, and there was a separate Whole Foods next door that sold all the alcohol.
Florida yeah. does that too.
Yeah, Seattle does that sometimes too.
Yeah, until recently, Washington was one of the states where all liquor stores are state run. So yeah. There was no hard liquor in any of the grocery stores. Weird. But now we have it.
It's one of those things in Nevada where there was one night where I drank from 10 to 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think anyone who is from Nevada and drinks has that same what is last call experience. I know my yeah. mom had it when we were in Michigan. She went out
some culture
partying
shock.
With all her friends, and she came back and she's like, they shut down the bars. They shut them down.
they
say they
down.
Won't give you any more booze.
Not only that, they turn off the lights or turn on the lights.
All right. Moving on to what are your morals worth? So this one's going in the ridiculous direction instead of having you, you know, poison alcohol or shoot anyone.
How much not to drink for the rest of my life?
How much do I have to pay you to pull a Carrie Nation? That is, take an axe, head to your closest bar, and start hacking up the furniture. When asked to explain yourself, you must say, I am a bulldog running along at the feet of Jesus, barking at what he doesn't like.
This is going to be up there, I think.
I don't know. I think I can get off on plea of insanity at that point.
I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. No matter what I get off on, I'm still probably going to be responsible for repairs to the bar. So it has to be at least enough to cover the damage that I do.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, $10,000?
Well, I mean, it's got to be way more than that.
I get to hack up some stuff with an axe.
We're not talking about just one bar, and like, you're going to get arrested and stuff too.
Yeah, and in today's climate, I'd be really worried about the police just shooting me.
That's true, you do
you're
have an axe.
You're white!
Yeah.
In Seattle.
Yeah, that does still kind of sound fun.
Our nearest bar is a dog bar.
That's true. I get a text.
Oh, see, you changed... You changed locations. Your nearest bar used to be three bars.
Yeah,
we've moved. It's now a dog bar.
And they were like a hipster bar, an expensive bar, and like a sports bar.
Yeah.
I chose the hipster bar, and the hipsters still look down on me.
You're not hipster enough.
You and your cowboy boots.
I didn't have the cowboy boots.
Nevada dust. A tumbleweed rolls in with you.
Hey, y'all. Can I impress y'all with my camera?
Got any sarsaparilla?
That bar was even called a saloon, so if you were wearing your cowboy hat, you should have been welcome.
I don't have a cowboy hat. Cowboy
yeah, you should have brought your chaps with you.
Yep, my assless chaps. Aren't all chaps assless, though?
Yes, they
I think
are.
So.
I don't know. Like I said, like 50,000 bucks. I get to chop something up with an axe while people look on horrified. It's like performance art.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, it depends on the bar you go to. I know we have some bars around here that have some pretty fancy furniture.
Can someone film me while I'm doing it?
I'm sure someone will.
Somebody will definitely film you.
Well, like a person I trust to film from good angles.
You're going to hire a film crew, too?
Well, just you with, like, a good camera.
Why?
It's performance art.
Yeah.
All right.
You're still going to get in trouble. Yeah. I don't think you're going to find a bar that's that lenient.
Well, no, I'm going to get in trouble, but the 50,000 bucks, I mean.
Yeah, I'm going to have to crank it up just a little bit. I'll say 75, because I imagine I'm probably going to go to jail for at least a few months, and then I'll probably lose my job because I'm crazy and a bulldog.
Because, you know, I'm Jesus's bulldog.
I was Jesus's bulldog, y'all.
But, yeah. I'd probably do that, 75,000.
I mean, I have no idea what sort of, like, compensation I'm going to have to give to the bars and legal fees. I was going to go for 100,000.
I'm with you, Adam. It's best to, you know, pad things just in case.
Yeah. I'm going to need to take care of myself after all of my long legal battles.
Yeah, of course.
Buy a nicer axe for the next time.
I'm going to have to sharpen up that axe.
All right. I think that's it. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks to my co-hosts, and thank you so much for tuning in today. If you would like more information about today's episode, check out our website at acidpoppodcast.podbean.com. You can also find us on Twitter at acidpoppodcast and contact us at acidpoppodcast@gmail.com. Be sure to like, subscribe, and give us all the stars you can. Stay safe out there, and we'll see you next week.